doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub. We are sitting down to record this on Thursday, February 3rd, a little more than a week to go until the Super Bowl. And today, we'll be hitting some recent fantasy-relevant headlines and doing a brief preview of the Super Bowl, this Bengals-Rams matchup. To do that, I'm joined by Pat Doherty, Danny Carter, and Kyle Dvorchik. Guys, at the top here, I just want to check in on ongoing situation. Have we figured out what to do with our free time now that the season is close to over? Pat, I'll start with you. Have you officially reintroduced yourself to your family yet? I know you leave for the season. You kind of say a tearful goodbye, and then you're gone. Where are we now?
Well, I haven't really had the free time yet because I'm working on two articles to publish after the Super Bowl. And also, I had not publicly mentioned this yet, but 10 days of my life were stolen by Denny Carter when he gave me Omicron through the screen. And I did have the Omicron variant, and I mean, thankfully, no one in my family got it, but the fact that no one else got it meant I had to keep quarantining for a long time. And so I was in the basement for a good long while. And yeah, so I had the Omicron. I'm just working all the time. I actually am working a lot still. So yeah, no, I haven't had the free time yet. I'm looking forward to one day experiencing that, though.
So the kids have forgotten what daddy looks like, basically, is what you're saying.
Sad tale. And they knew me only as a man whose only activity became watching the Australian Open. And yeah, it was a tough scene.
Does the Australian Open last for 2 months? Or was it
a fortnight, Denny? 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks? 2 weeks.
Huh. Yep. And it's on all night.
I thought it started around Thanksgiving.
You stay up later than 9 p.m. like I do and you don't, then you become very familiar with the rhythms of the Australian Open. So the people's major.
I hate that I'm in the same boat as you, Pat, that like I've already started a lot of stuff. I have 12 articles in the bank already
what a big off-season series for us from what I hear.
I will be previewing every team very close to. By the time the next show comes out, we'll be about a week away from it. But so I have like 12 in the bank already because I have so much work to get caught up on. And I just keep delaying the part where I see my family again, just keep pushing it back and back. Like, you know, the NFL season's winding down. Actually, I still have a lot of work to do, even though it's week 18. Okay, well, the season's about to be over. Okay, well, I've got some prep to do. And then it'll be the draft. But I'm thinking in 2028 is when I'll actually get to hang out with my girlfriend again.
I have filled my time while doing Adjust the Ranks segments, of course, and also grinding PGA DFS lineups and making myself absolutely miserable doing it.
And you also convalesced from the good old coronavirus yourself.
I did. We both had COVID at the same time. We arranged it, you know, so that we were both, infected with Omicron in the same 10-day span.
Right? And so we can test negative then at Super Bowl Media Week, where we are attending next week.
That's right.
So that was maybe the only upside of the entire experience. I was fine, by the way.
Danny, I heard you also briefly were dabbling in NBA DFS. Has that ship sailed? Or are we still going hard at it? You were asking me about Phoenix Suns backup centers not long ago.
I was. I was very interested in who was going to play center for the Suns as of 2 weeks ago. I am no longer interested in that. And
okay,
I think I'm over that. You know, I tested it. I just wanted to see what it was like. It was not good. Here's the thing.
It's the worst.
It's awful.
It's terrible. You have to be connected to your machine, whatever it is, your laptop, your phone.
Yeah.
Every second of every day in order to understand.
Well, to be fair, that sounds, what does that change for you? To be fair, like.
No, but I mean, there's a difference between grinding NBA lineups and doom scrolling, you know, which is that's my thing.
It feels like having also still playing NBA DFS, it feels like the same thing. You should just play Showdown. Showdown NBA is pretty good. And you get to show up once, you wait till the starting lineups come out, show up once, and that's it. Because, yeah, once we're out of football, I still can't imagine. Like, of course, I'll be wanting to sweat. I always like to sweat, right? But I just can't possibly imagine. Even as someone who, like you, is pretty every second logged on. That's not a type of logged on I want to be. Just, like, scrolling for lineups and, like, minutes projections and stuff is vile.
Oh, it's horrible. No, you're right. Showdown can be fun. I actually played – I of course, I just said I did, I'm not playing. I am playing. I did play last night the showdown between the Nets and the Suns.
Well, that changed. Your tune changed very quickly there. Well, yeah, I mean, sure, I was playing yesterday,
but that's totally different than actually trying to figure out a 7-game slate. That's hellish.
By the way, I didn't know what I was walking into here. You guys just absolutely slamming my other fantasy occupation right here. I'm in the room. I'm in the room here, guys.
Well, the NBA is a long-term goal of within the next 5 to 6 years of having a game where the star players for both teams are actually playing at the same time.
Okay.
So they're working on that.
They're working on that. Settle down, Pat. All right, we're going to do a high-level preview of the Super Bowl, looking at what we expect from the big names. But first, we have a few news items to hit off the top here. Let's start with Jalen Hurts, who had surgery on his injured left ankle on Wednesday. Pat, we've seen over the last couple of years some really heightened examples that high ankle sprains can actually be kind of terrifying for players' fantasy outlooks. Michael Thomas, Christian McCaffrey, a couple recent examples. Do you worry about Hurts, a quarterback who runs a lot, having lingering issues with his ankle heading into next season as we're now in the surgery phase of this thing?
I don't, because there's some pretty key differences with Michael Thomas. The first being he played through the injury. And the second being, I mean, Michael Thomas was doing like weird stuff with his recovery and surgery timeline, right? Like he didn't follow the team's recommendation, and then they were at loggerheads about when he did actually go under the knife. Whereas Hurts's first, he could actually play through it. And then secondly, he's doing like the straightforward timetable, and he got the operation. He's going to have a full offseason to rehab. It is, as we were talking before the show, high ankle sprain can change your life if you don't rehab it properly. I've mentioned this on the show before, but Jalen Hurts has an NFL training staff guiding him through the process. I'm assuming, unlike me, he will actually do the physical therapy when prescribed at the time, and his ankle will be fine. So it is in season, high ankle sprains are like a big danger sign, like, you know, like a red light, because just to a T, without fail, every team rushes their players back from high ankle sprains. But the fact that he's got, it was literally January when he went under the knife, he should be probably fully recovered for OTAs in April. And I just don't think I could get concerned about this one. I think it'll be a pretty straightforward recovery for Jalen Hurts.
And thankfully, because his game was severely affected down the stretch, in that he really didn't rush all that often. When he did, it wasn't nearly as effective. You know, those 12, 15, even 18 rushing attempt games that we got from him early in the season, those vanished completely. And, you know, you have to believe that the ankle played a role in that, if not being the sole reason for that change in how the Eagles used him. So for fantasy purposes, it is vitally important that he has two functioning recovered ankles to start next year.
Danny, I think his rushing yards per game went from almost 60 before the injury to under 40 after the injury. So yeah, I mean, 33% less rushing output is a really big deal for a dual threat quarterback. So it did, although he was able to play through it, it did drastically affect his game and change the way he played.
Do we think Kyler Murray's was a high ankle sprain, by the way, this year? Did we ever get clarity on that?
Pretty much any time a player misses time with an ankle injury, it's a high ankle sprain. Because a non-high ankle sprain is just like when you roll your ankle, basically. And they will play through that like 10 times. Usually that's when they come back to the game. Kind of like, you know, in the NBA.
Well, those guys sit out, Pat. I know you know this. those NBA players won't play through it, though.
a non-high ankle sprain is very much like Wednesday doesn't practice and everyone's like, oh my God. And then he practices limited Thursday and upgraded Friday. That's usually like if you don't have a high ankle sprain, it's like you get some practice reps off and then you play the next weekend.
Yeah, if they miss a game that's basically your sign that it was a high ankle sprain. And the recovery timelines have gotten way more aggressive. Like, they used to never play through high ankle sprains, and that has become much more common the past few years. And usually they are not effective.
I mean, I've almost started to treat it like, not like a season-ending injury in terms of fantasy, but when a player on your roster gets a high ankle sprain, I mean, you kind of have to just immediately cut your expectations just drastically, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, I that's the way I've approached it as well. And also, when you get teams being very careful with the language that they use for an ankle sprain, I feel like that's another red flag for fantasy purposes. When people say, coaches will say, well, it's a mid to high ankle sprain. It's not a high ankle sprain. Right. You know, like, well, okay, let's or they'll say low ankle sprain, which I've been told by an actual doctor is not a thing. There's no such thing as a low ankle sprain. So when they start with that language, it gets me very nervous. But yeah, I have the same approach, Matt.
All right, next up, according to NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, the Vikings are zeroing in on Rams OC Kevin O'Connell as their new head coach. Kyle, assuming this hire does happen, what kind of impact can you imagine this might have on the Vikings offense as we transition out of the Mike Zimmer, please can we just run it a ton era?
Yeah, I don't know if I call it a slam dunk. The slam dunk has been like Brian Daboll. If you got Brian Daboll, you got the slam dunk. If you didn't, you had lots of good options. I do think O'Connell was among the best options. We've seen both. It's easy to kind of, it kind of loops in well to what we'll talk about later, the Super Bowl, because obviously we have both McVay and a McVay disciple playing in the Super Bowl. This past year, the Bengals and the Rams were both positive pass rate over expectation. Bengals are like just slightly, because they had so many games where they were just complete hot and cold. If Joe Mixon got the first carry of the game, he was getting 10 more first down carries that game, and it was awful. But then they had games where they were pushed, they competed, and they went absolutely bonkers throwing the football. And having that upside is good. Having the downside of like killing three drives in a game by getting stuffed on first down is not great. And that's something that Sean McVay, even in the playoffs, we saw. I mean, the reason the Bucs were able to come back and almost win that game is because he was like, let's just Cam Akers it for the rest of the game when you were facing Tom Brady. You can't be doing that stuff. So I still think we've seen years and years of Sean McVay, plus now you're a Sean McVay disciple, being really efficient offenses, good passing attacks, and that's how you win. And the Vikings have a good, limited, but very good quarterback with one of the best young receivers, like still very arguably the best young receiver in the league. So I think it's really good. It's a promising outlook. The only concern would be that he didn't call plays in Los Angeles, although all reports say that he was like a vital piece in developing the offense. So overall, very positive outlook. I still think, like you said, we won't see quite as much of the running, even though I did kind of talk about how every once in a while these McVay teams or McVay disciple teams get in this funk, but generally they are pass heavier than the league. They also don't pass a ton on first down, which is kind of the most, or don't run a ton on first down, which is kind of the most important thing. I'm cool if you run it on third and one every single time. Perfectly fine. Just pass when you want to establish an advantage. And generally the McVay teams have done that. So good signing. No Brian Daboll, but I would say he's maybe the second best option.
It's good too, because they have like the personnel to run the McVay offense, whatever that is, where Kirk Cousins is somewhere in between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, not in terms of like playing style, but he's like a much more efficient, can better downfield than Jared Goff, but also not quite as reckless as Matthew Stafford can get. He can kind of make plays down the field. So he's somewhere in between those two extremes. And the two, they have the personnel if they want to run like the Todd Gurley era Rams offense, where they do kind of want to be run heavy, but then they can still have a more explosive passing attack than the Rams have with Jared Goff. And two, the Rams have always had really good receiver personnel the entire time Sean McVay's been there. Obviously, they have that in Minnesota. So if their plan is to just kind of clone the Rams offense, clone the Rams offensive approach, they have the coach now to match the personnel. So it is a really good marriage from that perspective. I mean, the problem for the Vikings is that the downfall was really on the defense last year. In the past 2 years, where they thought Mike Zimmer would fix the 2020 problems in 2021, and then he just kind of didn't. They were better than they were in 2021, but the offensive side of the ball wasn't like the big question mark for the Vikings. And this doesn't do anything to solve what has been like kind of like the slow deterioration on defense for the Vikings.
One more item to hit here before we get into our Super Bowl preview. And this is news that really isn't shocking, but is worth mentioning. Adam Schefter reports that Jimmy Garoppolo expects to be traded. Denny, I don't even know if this is so much about where Jimmy G lands, but maybe more about, do we have any prayer of keeping our expectations in check during a long offseason for Trey Lance? I mean, we were excited about him last offseason. Now we think he's going to have the job to himself. No doubt here. Do we have a chance?
No chance. There's zero chance that people are going to keep themselves in check. We will be totally out of check when it comes to touting Trey Lance as the next great thing. Because look, what we did last year as an overall as an industry, as we said, this guy might not even start, but you're still drafting him. It doesn't matter. He's gonna emerge. He's gonna be unstoppable. And really, it comes down to the dual threat aspect and the fact that he doesn't really have to be like a great passer in order to be a great fantasy producer. So that was the appeal. That is the appeal. That will be the appeal next year. I guess the only hope is that like maybe like more casual fantasy players will say, you know, that guy couldn't get the starting job on his own team when he was drafted third overall and Jimmy Garoppolo was starting the whole season. So forget him. That's the only prayer. But honestly, in most leagues, you're going to have to go in on Trey Lance to get him.
Denny, what quarterback do you think is like QB 7, 8, 9, 10? What quarterback do you think he is September 12th, right? The day before, the day before the season kicks off. What quarterback do you think he is?
6.
I was going to say 7. 7 was my guess. Dude, we literally drafted him knowing like we're not getting the first 4 weeks and maybe we don't get the first 8 weeks. We're like fringe QB one still. He's going to like, it was, the hype was unreal, especially like if I think that will be the place he settles on like 6, 7, 8, 9, probably I'd say 7, 8, 9, but like 6 is totally a perfectly fine number. Unlike sharper places like an underdog where people are really tuned in there, or really any best ball site where people are tuned in. Like 100%, I think that's where it'll go. It's going to be awful not being able to get a ton of them.
Because he's going to have like dual narratives too, not just the dual threat, but the Kyle Shanahan, like no way he's not unlocking.
If Kyle Shanahan can make Jimmy Garoppolo a thing, and Jimmy Garoppolo's terrible. He's a FCS terrible. Like people think he's awful. He's actually fine. I think he's fine. Oh. But people have this awful notion of him and they give Kyle Shanahan 100% of the credit. If he can turn Jimmy Garoppolo just a complete dumpster fire into a good quarterback, he's gonna make Trey Lance an MVP. Even though, like, I don't know, I think Jimmy's fine. I don't know. I think we give Shanahan a little too much credit for that. But people are gonna tell themselves that, right? The Shanahan offense made Jimmy Garoppolo a thing. It's gonna make Trey Lance an MVP.
The analytics say Jimmy G's elite. Just good, elite.
I know. It's by the way, Trey Lance, 71 attempts as a rookie. His closing ADP was QB 20, but it actually wasn't as egregious as that might sound. The people he was taking ahead of Tua, Jameis Winston, Derek Carr, Mac Jones, like that wasn't going to haunt you in a fantasy league. So it was a good bet. His ADP was considerably higher for a while.
Yeah.
He was almost in QB 1 territory for a while, but his closing ADP was QB 20. Yeah. There's quite literally no way he's not in the top 10. And I think you guys are right. It's going to be QB 6 or 7.
We'll have to assume, by the way, that Kyle Shanahan doesn't bring in competition for Trey Lance and doesn't want to stop him from starting because Kyle Shanahan likes a lot of things. He doesn't like Trey Lance. I mean,
Matt Ryan, folks.
Clarity.
Ryan.
Hey, that's not out of the realm of possibilities now.
No, it's not. The Falcons might just eat that dead money. He signs, you know, a 1 year like a sunset deal with Kyle Shanahan and once again starts 17 games over Trey Lance. And we're all the Joker.
God, that's happening. Yeah.
Took you guys all 4 minutes to ruin that. All right, it's over. Trey Lance.
This is like secretly
over.
Like in chat, we're all talking like, all right, let's spin this so we can get him as QB like 12, right? So we're all just like, like I'm gonna pay social $100 to be like, does Trey Lance start in 2022 post or something like that? Just so we can all secretly keep our good ADPs in check.
That was amazing. You guys volleyed his ADP up to 6 or 7 and then got it back down to 10 or 12. So well done. That was a really efficient 4 minutes. We accomplished a lot there. Let's get into a high-level Super Bowl preview. We're going to hit the big names here. And over at PointsBet, the Rams, as of Thursday, 4-point favorites, a total of 48.5. Now, these two teams did not match up this season. So for starters, Kyle, how do you expect Joe Burrow and the Bengals, based on what we've seen from them, kind of different identities, I guess, on offense throughout the season at different times, how do you expect them to attack this Rams D?
I pray that they will at least not do the thing where I talked about earlier, Joe Mixon opens up the first play and then, well, that drive doesn't work out, but the next play, right? I hope that they learned their lesson from playing against the Chiefs about how, like, you know, we saw the two sides of the coin. One, when an offense shuts down, even having a big lead, if you have Joe Burrow, you can come back from almost any deficit, right? The offense is just so electric. And on the other hand, they've played many games where we see their own offense do the thing where they stall out. So I am going to give Zach Taylor enough credit. I think he's earned enough credit. He's in the Super Bowl. I think he's earned enough credit to be somewhat adaptive, right? And in terms of EPA per play rank, I believe the Rams rank as a good but not great pass defense and one of the better run defenses, although some of that is they didn't have Von Miller all year. Still, we know that teams are much better at passing than they are running just on how efficient they are. And then the Rams look like a team that, although they're good against both, they're an above average team on both. They're probably a team you'd prefer to pass against. And we know that the Bengals have the weapons to do it. So I'm going to give them credit and say they pass a good bit more often, and especially because they'll be, I assume, pushed by the opposing offense. And I think that bodes well for them. I think they probably play a better game when both teams are scoring points than when both teams are not scoring points, right? They sort of tether to their opponents. And I think they're much more likely to win a game where both teams go over 30 than they are to go under 20. And I think this is the latter of those games.
Well, so sticking with the Bengals passing attack, we saw T. Higgins go over 100 yards in the win over the Chiefs. He had 96 yards the week before after that. Wild card dud. Jamar Chase, meanwhile, his quietest game in terms of yardage, I should say, 6 catches, 54 yards and a score, while Tyler Boyd has been pretty invisible, a total of 62 receiving yards through 3 postseason games. So, Danny, looking at all these guys, what are you expecting from the Bengals receivers? Do you see a path to a big ceiling game for Higgins or Chase against the Rams?
Yeah, I think there's always, you know, a path. I feel like I'm not breaking news by saying Jamar Chase can have a big game or T. Higgins can.
Right.
But I think, you know, a further look at what the Rams do on defense, which is blitz and blitz quite a lot. They have the 10th highest blitz rate in the league this season. That has continued into the playoffs. They blitz Brady a lot and it paid off big time. If they do that and they leave Chase and Higgins against the Rams, corners. I know Jalen Ramsey is an all-world corner. It's, you know, nothing against him, but it could be an issue, could be a major issue. So against man coverage this year, Jamar Chase had the 7th highest reception rate in the league, and he had the highest yards per catch facing man coverage. He also had the 2nd highest yak versus man coverage. So yards after catch, that's only trailing Deontay Johnson. He dominated any time that he got that sort of favorable coverage. Higgins wasn't bad himself. He was 13th among all receivers who played at least 20% of their team snaps in yards per catch against man coverage. I think that there is definitely a path to the Bengals maybe facing a deficit or having to just go toe-to-toe with a good Rams offense. And these two guys getting that favorable coverage. If the Rams continue to go after Burrow, as we know, as we've seen, has been excellent against pressure as well.
Meanwhile, so far in the playoffs, the Rams are allowing just 51 yards a game on the ground to opposing running backs. That does not include receiving yards. So, Pat, is Joe Mixon's receiving usage and just overall touch volume going to be enough to get him home against the Rams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they still, like Kyle said, I think sometimes they take a little too much flack for the way they approach offense. And like, they get kind of just like too much for like this, like reflexive criticism for the way they run the ball. And they do run too much on first down, but I just think a lot of it is part of trying to counteract the pressure, trying to get just not overly expose Joe Burrow behind an offensive line that we've seen collapse multiple times, not just this season, but down the stretch. I mean, collapsed against the Titans. I mean, one of the worst offensive line performances you'll ever see from a team postseason. Otherwise, I just think part of that is sometimes their best laid plans kind of go out the window. And just like, I think he maybe approaches games, Zach Taylor, better than he gets credit for. But in that being said, he always finds an excuse to be balanced one way or another. Like the Bengals almost never come out like, well, they just abandoned the run that game. Like that just basically doesn't happen for the Bengals. Joe Mixon's had at least 20 touches every postseason game so far. The Rams, too. I mean, the Rams have been kind of like doing like the Zach Taylor recently, where like they kind of want the game to go slower and be more balanced and more run heavy. And I could see maybe a shootout atmosphere not developing here. I mean, 48.5 is not a bad total. It's not like super high for two pretty good offenses, obviously. And I just wouldn't be surprised if the under was in play. It's a slower game. There's a lot of runs for both teams. And yeah, I just see very little chance of Joe Mixon's run game volume not being there.
One more Bengals note before we move to the Rams. CJ Uzomah has a sprained left MCL after leaving the AFC Championship game early. He's reportedly hoping to return for the Super Bowl, of course. If he can't go, though, Kyle, think that would open up more targets for our forgotten friend Tyler Boyd in this matchup?
He's canceled.
Yeah, I still think like it's not like Uzomah was playing this massive role, right? He was combining with Tyler Boyd and the running backs to be the short to intermediate type of guys. And that's not the best way to use your offense when you have T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. It's a perfectly good way because Boyd is really talented. He's just not that superstar level that Chase definitely is. And Higgins is like brushing up against that as well. He'll probably go, like 10 years with being an incredible receiver and people remember him as, oh yeah, he played with Jamar Chase, right? So I still think Tyler Boyd will continue to get outplayed by playing with teammates, which is probably a lot better than him because they're both really good. It helps, and it's definitely not like Drew Sample, who's just a straight-up blocker. He doesn't do anything other than block, is going to be taking any of the targets. So it's good for Boyd. I still don't know if, like, you know, we're talking about, like, the single-game stuff for the Super Bowl. I don't know if I'm, like, dying to get Tyler Boyd in my lineups.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see, like, 10 to 12 targets, Kyle. But, I mean, he has only 10 catches for 62 yards through three playoff games. His highest reception total is 4. I do think it's safe to say 4 receptions is probably his floor. Because, like you said, Drew Sample's just not a viable option to siphon up. And he lost C.J. Uzomah targets. Like you said, it's not like Uzomah's leaving behind a million targets, but he is leaving behind a non-trivial amount of targets. Like, he is a guy who gets at least, like, 5 to 6 looks per game. Not usually more, but pretty often, like, pretty regularly, he's in that 5 to 6 range. And you'd have to assume at least 2 or 3 of those maybe trickle down to Tyler Boyd. You had to, just to counteract a good pass rush. I just, even with bad pass rushes, again, the Bengals sometimes have to counteract it just to keep Joe Burrow upright. So I do see probably at least 2 or 3 more than usual, like, safety valve looks going down to Tyler Boyd. And yeah, rather than Galaxy Brain, Drew Sample, maybe just have slightly higher expectations for Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, I actually kind of like Tyler Boyd here. I mean, he essentially will function as the tight end if Uzomah is out, because like
he's got Kyle tight end size too. He's actually not as small as you think.
No, he's not small.
He's not receiver, small. No.
No one said he was small, Pat. Why do you think he said that? Never said that.
Drew Sample, you know, is not running a ton of routes. Like, he might get a dump off here or there, but in a game with kind of inflated passing numbers for the Bengals, if that comes to pass, you know, then we get target inflation for a guy like Boyd if Uzomah is out. So I don't think that Boyd is has much of a ceiling, but like I think he saw 8 targets last week with Uzomah going down. I know not many of those came in the second half. If I remember, it was like directly after Uzomah got hurt that Boyd was.
He had
targeted,
yeah, 6 targets, and his his yardage during the playoffs was 26, 17, and 19.
Yeah, but no. This is a PPR cheat code situation.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I think we can say with certainty is that Drew Sample made a huge mistake learning how to block, basically. Yeah. This is where that's really that decision.
This is what, listen, it tight ends, if you're listening out there, please stop learning how to block. it would be better for everybody.
Dude, Drew Sample was like born knowing how to block. He was coming out of college, was like only a blocker as well. He was like a day two guy who's just going to be an extra tackle, which is like not a good pick, honestly.
He's making a living.
What do you? Yeah, I mean, doesn't he have like, he probably has like 25 career catches?
If take the under on that, I would say.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
We are going to hit the Rams side of this in a second. First, we're going to take a very quick break.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The NFL postseason is here, and NBC Sports Edge Plus is giving you a special offer. Get 15% off an Edge Plus annual subscription throughout the playoffs when you use promo code PLAYOFF15. Get every tool for every game at one low price. It is easier than ever to play and wager with confidence when you have NBC Sports Edge Plus. Pat Daugherty is raising his hand.
I was just going to say, yeah, we may have a memory hold a certain something here where after CJ Uzomah got hurt last year with a torn Achilles, apparently Drew Sample did catch 40 passes.
Wow.
Not yeah, sure I just looked I really up remember too, that. But... So yeah, he's, I mean, if you're not playing him in Super Bowl DFS, you're basically trying to lose money. Wow. That's what we're saying.
If you're not playing him in his career 6.2 yards per target, I don't know what you're doing, sir.
Wow, that is a big piece of news, Pat. I'm glad that you took the time there.
I actually don't believe it. I actually don't believe it. Yeah.
All right, to the Rams in the wild card round. Matthew Stafford only threw 17 times in the easy win, but since then he has attempted 38 and 45 passes in back-to-back games, thrown for 366 and 337 yards. Pat, should we expect this big Rams passing volume to continue against the Bengals?
I would say no, to be honest. I mean, Stafford hasn't really had any like low volume games. Like, was very rarely below 30, with the huge notable exception of the wild card round where he attempted like 17 passes against the Cardinals. But I'd say the high pass volume the past 2 weeks has been a little fluky. Some of it resulted from panic mode against the Bucs, where they had to start passing down the stretch again. Like, that inflated the pass. And what should have been, you know, like an all run second half, like that inflated his passing volume a little bit. And then last week, I mean, it wasn't a shootout, you know, only 37 total points at the 49ers. But the fact that the 49ers basically stopped sustaining drives kind of artificially inflated the Rams play volume. The Rams offense wasn't having a great day either. We attempted 45 passes, even though they had 30 rushes. They just ran a ton of plays. And I just think it's another week where, like I said, we've talked about it a lot several weeks on the show, how they're hiding Stafford a little more. And it's hard to discern that from the attempts totals, but they have tried to be more conservative. They've tried to be more balanced. Now we have two teams like want to accomplish the same thing. I think, I mean, like, yeah, he basically never finishes below 30, but I would say he'd be more in the 30 to 35 range this week than like the 35 to 40 range he's kind of been ending up lately. I just feel like kind of from like abnormal game flows, and that, so you don't have to worry about like the pass volume like collapsing, but I would bet more in the 30 to 35 range.
Denny, it turns out that Cooper Kupp is not washed after all. Just a quick update. 20 catches, 325 receiving yards in the Rams' last two wins combined. We also saw Odell Beckham post his first 100-plus yard receiving game since 2019 last week. Obviously, we just expect huge games from Kupp at this point. But what about Odell? Do you see the potential for some carryover after 19 targets the last two games combined?
I think it's become clear that the Rams' passing offense is way more condensed than it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, when, you know, Van Jefferson was still involved enough, you know, for us to be interested for fantasy purposes. Over the past two games, OBJ has a 21.7% target share. Well, it's not close to the 29% target share enjoyed by Cooper Kupp. Van Jefferson's target share has dropped to under 10% in those two games. He's still devouring air yards, but those are looking more like prayer yards at the moment.
The wind sprinter in chief, the Chris Hogan Memorial.
Oh man, outside. That's rough. I mean, Van Jefferson's is not Chris Hogan. Come on, you know, and the volume is very much welcomed and necessary for Beckham, for this latter day Beckham in this Rams offense, because his 10.7 yards per target means that, you know, he's going to need some volume. Like, he's going to need some targets in order to get there for fantasy purposes. I don't think that he's going to be, or he hasn't been used. I don't think that there's any indication that he will be used as this downfield threat. But the way that we saw him used last week is perfectly fine for fantasy. If, you know, a condensed target distribution is far better, I think, for fantasy. Of course, when we're talking about a single game contest, it is takes a little bit of the fun out of it. But it's Van Jefferson is, you know, the, you know, not close anymore to OBJ.
Yeah, the days are like long gone. Where for a while after OBJ arrived in LA, it was kind of like, well, how do we separate Van Jefferson and OBJ in the ranks? They're both just kind of right in this wide receiver 28 to 36 range. But I think Van Jefferson was kind of like a victim of the Rams, a shift in philosophy. And again, trying to protect Matthew Stafford more down the stretch, because it was injury related. It was turnover related, which was maybe because of the injuries. But after week 14, including the playoffs, these are Van Jefferson's target totals: 3, 2, 6, 5, 3, 1, 3, 5. He's just, like we said, he's basically being an outside wind sprinter, whereas OBJ, you know, maybe not as explosive as he once was, but you know, he can be a route tactician in the short to intermediate areas of the field. He can be a guy that can still turn a slant into like a huge gain, a guy who's still really, really good on the perimeter and the sideline. He had a number of like really tough, like toe tapping type catches against the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. And his, this with this like slight shift in philosophy for the Rams, it just made so much more sense to kind of lock on to OBJ underneath. And I don't think it's like a fluke. I think it will just, the usage will continue for the Super Bowl.
Probably not at all frustrating for Browns fans to see OBJ looking maybe not like his vintage self, but looking really good in a Rams uniform. I'm sure that's not annoying at all if you're a Cleveland Browns fan.
He looked really, his body control just looks really, really good again. I'm sure his like top gear isn't as good as it once was, but yeah.
Was it the divisional round where he had the like back falling catch on like the 2 or 3 yard line, which was just like incredible toe tapping, hand eye coordination? Like that's the sort of the Odell Beckham that the Browns wanted. Instead, they got a guy who didn't like his quarterback and his quarterback wasn't that good.
That play then, you know, last week where he caught the ball. It was in Rams territory, but he made a similar catch like falling backwards. Then where he got helmet to helmeted, still held on to the ball. Still got up and was able to, you know, menace the guy helmet to helmet. And I think it was Jimmy Ward. And so, yeah, OBJ, he's as back as he's going to be, basically. Like, he's back.
Against the Niners in the NFC Championship game, the backfield split narrowed a bit. It was 14 touches for Cam Akers, 11 for Sony Michel. Now, Michel looked pretty bad, Kyle. Just 12 total yards on those 11 carries. I was like, did Sony Michel somehow get washed in the span of, like, 2 weeks? Like, I was very confused what was going on. But maybe he was just getting kind of those really predictable carries just slamming into a brick wall. But I guess the question is, mainly I think we're focused on Cam Akers here. Is there a path to some explosive output for Akers against the Bengals in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's difficult to separate because, yeah, when the Rams run, it does feel like there's a very high level of predictability to it. But Akers has been, I don't want to say just as inefficient because, man, that was a very inefficient outing from Sony Michel. But Akers has also been dreadfully inefficient. And I'm guessing this would be my best guess is the split last week was probably based on the fact that Akers really had, like, he must have had Bucks money line because he was really trying to give that game back to them. And so they split the backfield more evenly. Neither back was that efficient. And both against the run and the pass, but just in general, the Bengals, I didn't expect them to be that good of a defense at all coming in, frankly, but all of their free agent signings have panned out. They've had some young players step up. So I do think that they're a defense that at least they're way better than I thought they'd be. And if the Rams haven't had success up until this point in the playoffs, I'm not predicting a massive turnaround. I think that's the biggest concern for them as a team, frankly, is that they do the thing that we've talked about where they try and, you know, predictably run on first and 10 every time. And with how inefficient their running backs have been, frankly, Cam Akers still, like, it's incredible that he came back from the Achilles injury as quickly as he did. As far as I know, it's probably like the quickest anyone has come back from that injury, like literally maybe ever. Obviously, these things get faster over time, but this was a leap forward. He doesn't look like he's got that same level of explosion yet, and hopefully he gains it back by next year when we're talking about him from a fantasy perspective. But as of right now, I think the backfield split probably continues, probably still shades towards Akers, but is 15 carries enough for someone as inefficient as he has been? And I think he'll stay enough to get there. I would say no, unless he gets, you know, multiple goal line touchdowns.
Yeah. So we give so much grief to Zach Taylor for just kind of running for the sake of it. It certainly seems like that's what the Rams have been doing in the playoffs and just like trying to keep opposing defenses honest because there's just nothing here. I mean, it's 24 carries for 78 yards for Sony Michel. It's 3.3 yards per carry, 54 carries for 151 yards for Cam Akers. That's under 3 yards per carry. This is like truly just like going through the motions running just to try to like set up other stuff. Like they're not getting any production out of this whatsoever. Just maybe trying to keep Matthew Stafford clean again, just maybe trying to just, even if it's not successful, just trying to keep defenses mindful of the run. You know, they don't camp out too deep safeties or the too high safety disease that we saw all of 2021. So yeah, the Bengals get all the grief for this, but the Rams have definitely just been like going through the motions, running for the sake of it. And Cam Akers, like you said, it's such a great story. The power seems to be there. Like he's very hard to take down already. I mean, guys just kind of bouncing off of him. But like Kyle said, the explosion hasn't been there. And he was a guy as a rookie in 2020 where he had a lot of like these 2 or 3 yard runs, but then he's like the classic runner. It would set up like a 45 yard run. We haven't gotten the 45 yard run at all yet from Cam Akers since he's been back. And hard to see that developing in the Super Bowl.
I don't think we'd be doing this episode service if we didn't ask one obscure tight end question. I guess we already kind of did. We talked at length about Drew Sample already, but I think we got to go back to Denny here because Tyler Higbee, like CJ Uzomah, is dealing with a sprained MCL. So, Denny, how intrigued are you by the possibility of some Super Bowl fireworks from one Kendall Blanton?
I couldn't be more excited. I think that's the summation of my comments here coming up on
fair.
On Kendall Blanton, the most important player in the Super Bowl outside of Evan McPherson, obviously. If Higbee's out, you know, Blanton becomes very interesting, and I don't think I'm alone, you know, in saying this. He ran a route on about 80% of Stafford's dropbacks last week after Higbee exited the game with the knee injury. He caught 5 of 6 targets, saw 14% target share. One of the most interesting, just to be kind, plays of the postseason, I think, was when McVay had Blanton split out wide in single coverage, and the play was to him. Like, it was clear that Stafford, that was his first read, was Kendall Blanton running this extremely slow comeback route that gained 9 yards. Man, McVay, I think McVay kind of likes Blanton. He's going to be out there a lot. So, you know, what else can you ask for?
What does it mean that he was just instantly better than Tyler Higbee?
I asked the same question to myself. I said,
well, having watched Tyler Higbee play football, I'm not honestly that surprised.
How did Higbee, you know, looking back, how did Higbee have that nuclear 3-week run with Jared Goff? Was it 2020? Was it 2019?
The end of the 2019 season. 2019?
Wait, he became the most important player in fantasy.
He was
for
basically
a month.
George Kittle for 5 weeks.
Just where did that come from? Because it's never happened.
Did anyone actually see this happen? Because I don't remember watching it. I've seen the spreadsheets, but I don't remember watching it. Does anyone remember watching it? Because this feels very Berenstain Bears to me.
I don't remember anything before 2020.
The pandemic was designed as a distraction for people to forget what Tyler Higbee did down the stretch in 2019.
You could be right. You could be right. Now,
so a 5-game run, by the way, of 43 catches, 522 yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't know if that's the best, like whether I can find a better sample, but you get the idea. Man. I think that's it.
Yeah. It happened. It was the most confusing thing I think I've ever seen in fantasy. Like this guy who was like barely on the radar suddenly becoming, you know, Gronk plus Kelsey times Waller, you know?
A guy who was like rotating snaps with Gerald Everett was like, yeah, I don't know. He catches a touchdown, but really you can't predict him. So why would you ever play him? Right. Did become that player. And at that point we were just like, oh, he's very good. He's the best. In fact, he's one of the elite tight ends we have. And oh my God, how wrong were we?
Yeah. He was hands down the most disappointing tight end for his usage. If you consider his usage this year, he was top, I don't know, 5 or 7 or something in routes run. He basically was out there every single time the Rams dropped back, and he didn't do much.
It was 4 catches for 40 yards every, which is better than a 0, but the ceiling was just non-existent. Or like you said, on usage, that was amazing. And so we have our best people working on figuring out how 2019 happened.
Denny, to your point, Kendall Blanton will literally play almost every snap. Bryson Hopkins is their only other rostered tight end right now if Tyler Higbee doesn't play, because both Johnny Munt and Jacob Harris, like wide receiver tight end hybrid, I think are on the IR for the rest of the year. They both got hurt many, many weeks ago, months ago even. So you will get almost every snap. Like, I can't really imagine Bryson Hopkins, who has 1 catch on the year, I believe, gets almost any run.
By the way, producer Adam points out Kendall Blanton 33-1 to win Super Bowl MVP at points bet. And circling back to Higbee quickly, his first 10 games of 2019 before that explosion, 10 games, a total of 212 receiving yards. It's almost like that was a fluke, I'm starting to think. I'm just, as I look at it more and more, it might have been a fluke.
Is
could be.
Look, given a few more seasons of data, I'll be able to tell you if these statistics have stabilized.
I will say with Higbee, that was a fierce debate in the summer of 2020. There were some people very loudly faded his fast finish. They're, of course, now all tech millionaires. So
look, as a society, we had the important things on our minds.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think I lost friends over that Higbee thing in 2020.
All right, guys, that's the end of our high-level brief Super Bowl preview here. Much more content ahead here on the podcast and on the site. And with that in mind, what would you guys like to promote before we get out of here?
Well, Denny and I are we're going to Los Angeles, the city of angels, next week.
That's the rumor.
We have content coming at you every day from A Good Football Show and on the website. So, yeah, we're movie stars. Basically, Denny has a pompadour haircut now. So it's going to be a real big deal.
It's true.
We will be in L.A. for Super Bowl LV1.
Look, I got a haircut that said, this guy lives in L.A. and he owns a lot of crypto. You know, and that's what I was going for.
And Kyle, you are 12 deep on an unpublished series, about 180 articles at this point. When are we going to start seeing those roll out?
Yeah, if you're waiting to read something from me, like, please, Jesus, give me 2 weeks. It's literally like 2 weeks from when the show drops or less, something like that.
Okay.
I'll say, no, you can read from Kyle before then because he's taking on a lot of extra blurb hours while Denny and I go to L.A.
Yeah, so. That's true. Just read the news.
If you want to read Kyle's blurb on the Pro Bowl MVP, which I've said he has to write, check that out Sunday afternoon. So Kyle's going to be on the
Can't
website.
Check out the Monday spaces on Twitter. And it's like 2 o'clock. I think me and Lawrence will be talking about, I honestly don't even remember. I think we're talking about more about Super Bowl preview. Maybe I'll bring some prop stuff to it as well. Cause I do think like producer Adam even told us that Von Miller has the same odds as Kendall Blanton to win Super Bowl MVP. I get, you know, offense matters a lot. Kendall Blanton's going to have a large role, but maybe we'll talk about some of the absurd bets you can place there. Maybe I'll tease you with that.
Yeah, I'm going to need a lot of just really obscure, player prop.
Natty Anthem, Gatorade color, heads, tails. I mean, there are some real gems out there.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, that's going to do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a second to rate and review our show as well. I want to say thanks to everyone for listening and watching live. Pat, Kyle, Denny, thanks to you guys. Safe travels, gentlemen. Talk to you soon.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.